This is an interview with Gail Tregear, who is the daughter of the late Alan Tregear, who was Clerk of the House of Representatives from 1955 to 1958. Gail visited the Provisional Parliament House as a child and teenager, and I'll ask her to share some memories with us about her father and her memories of the building back then. Gail will be speaking with me, Libby Stewart, for the Oral History Program conducted by the Museum of Australian Democracy at Old Parliament House. On behalf of the director of the museum, I'd like to thank you for agreeing to participate in this program, Gail. Do you understand that the Commonwealth owns copyright in the interview material, but disclosure will be subject to any disclosure restrictions you impose in completing the rights agreement?
Yes.
This being so, may we have your permission to make a transcript or a summary of this recording, should we decide to make one?
Absolutely.
This interview is taking place today on Tuesday, 26th of June 2012 at the Museum of Australian Democracy at Old Parliament House. So perhaps we could begin, Gail, with the memories of your father, Alan Tregear. And would you be able to tell me what you know of your father's background, for example, where he was born and where he grew up?
Yes, he was born in Port Melbourne. They lived a bit all over the place because his father worked for the railways. And his father actually taught Ben Chifley to drive a train. But at the age of 12, he had to leave school because his father was out of work. He belonged to the wrong union. And they couldn't afford him not to be bringing in an income. And the same for his brother, who was 2 years older. So he went to work as a post office messenger boy, which so many of the senior public servants of subsequent years had started off in along that path.
Gosh, yes.
Now, he went to night school, and then he went on to Melbourne University and did a commerce degree, and he also had qualifications in accounting, and he was also a certified shorthand writer.
Wow. And Did he work to be able to support his studies through university?
Yes, he worked he worked for the post office.
Right. They used through the whole time of his studies.
Yeah. Well, he may have gone from delivering telegrams to further up the chain along that time, and then eventually he joined the parliamentary service when the Parliament House was still in Melbourne.
Yes. Right. So his what were his parents doing at the time? I guess his mother probably wasn't working.
No, she never worked. They were very poor. Mm-hmm. And as I said, grandfather worked for the railways. Mm-hmm. And the last place where I knew that they were living all together as a family was in Kensington, alongside the railway line there. And apparently there was a group of them that they used to have the people from a bit further up. They would walk down the tracks into town every morning, and they would just throw pebbles at the window of a house where somebody had to come out and join them, and they would all walk down the tracks, which was quite a hike into the main Melbourne depot.
Gosh, and that was a very hard life, and I don't
very imagine, very hard
quite,
life.
Probably quite a low wage.
Yes.
Mm. Mm. So your father finished his degree. Was it a bachelor?
Yes,
or?
He did. He got a Bachelor of Commerce. Mm. And he also had the accountancy certification and the shorthand writer's certification.
Right. So did he then get a job with the parliamentary service as soon as he'd graduated?
He would have got it beforehand because he didn't actually finish his degree till he was in Canberra. Everything had to be done by night school and part-time.
Right. Mm. So he moved from the post office then into the parliamentary.
Yes.
Mm. And so, what was his first job then?
I don't know.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah. You know, he really didn't talk much about the old days terribly much.
Mm. No. No, well, he so I've got that he joined the public service in around 1911. Does that sound right?
That could be yes, that could be right. Mm-hmm.
So he was studying at that stage.
Yeah.
And then he joined the Senate staff in 1920.
That's right.
He still Melbourne.
He was in the Senate with the Senate staff originally, and then I think he was at the Joint House at some stage, and then he went to the Reps. He might have even come to Canberra with the Joint House.
I've got that he transferred to the House of Reps staff in 1925, so that's just
right.
Prior
mm-hmm.
to coming here mm. that he was with them. I'll just go back to him a little. As a person, do you know if he had any particular religious views?
No, I mean, he didn't. He had two Methodist uncles, and the family was nominatively Methodist. But I discovered in subsequent years that his mother actually was Catholic. And my grandparents actually were married in the house of one of his Methodist minister uncles by another Methodist minister uncle. And my father and his brother were never baptized, and neither was I. So golf was far more important than religion, actually, in the family.
Oh, so it wasn't one of those families where they're split by the different...
No.
Mm. All right. And what about his political views? Do you know much about them? And
quite a bit, but he couldn't actually talk about them in public, of course, because of his job. But there were certain politicians he had a lot of time for. There were others he had no time whatsoever. And he was... but he was actually really very dedicated to the whole process of Parliament. He loved his job and he loved the whole of the parliamentary progress and the procedures and everything else that went with it.
Mm. Well, yes, you'd need a good love of them, I guess, to be in a career for that long.
Yes.
Did he have a leaning to one side of politics or the other?
Well, I know that one time when they hadn't been married long, my mother had, and they were in Canberra, my mother came back and she said, "Oh, these people have asked me if I would join the Liberal Party." And Dad said, "Do you want to cost me my job?" And so that was the end of politics in the family. Basically, we all sat on the fence as far as politics concerned. If there was good policy, yes, you were enthusiastic about it. If you thought something was stupid, you kept quiet.
So he didn't necessarily vote one way or the other his whole life?
He voted informally, always.
Is that right?
Yes.
Did he talk about that and why he did that?
Yes, because he didn't want to be seen any particular way as being leaning to one side or the other.
Is that because he worked in Parliament and he wanted to be seen as...
as completely neutral.
Gee, that's dedication, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, that's quite amazing. What about in his hobbies and recreational pursuits?
He was very good at all sports. Mm. He was an A-grade cricketer and tennis player, and his golf would have been good if he could have spent more time on it. My mother took over with that one. Mm. And he loved horses and horse racing.
Oh, so he followed that. Did he go to the races when he lived in Melbourne?
But... what was more that he and they lived next door to a trainer when they were in Kensington, and he and his brother used to go and ride track work.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Oh, so he was quite a rider as well as
horses. Oh, yeah, he was a good rider. Yeah. Mm. And he always had a strong interest in the racing.
So Farlap and that whole era he would have been...
Yes, he would have probably seen Farlap.
He probably would, yeah. Mm. Oh, that's great. And so golf he loved but didn't get enough time to play.
No, but it was what kept the marriage together.
Because mother played?
My mother was a seriously good golfer.
So that was probably something they continued all their lives?
Yes, they always played the mixed foursomes every Sunday and at all the tournaments and things. Mm. Except if it was a very big tournament. She was generally sought out by some of the better players.
So she was better than him?
Oh, yes. Didn't necessarily mean that she would beat him every time, but no, she was a very good player.
Mm, okay. And what about books and authors? And did he read widely?
He did. He liked to read a lot of periodicals because he'd bring things home from the library. Like we used to get the Punch and the Saturday Evening News and the... Saturday Evening Post, I think it was, and the Illustrated London News and all those sort of magazines. He always brought home a pile of the magazines. I think it's because he didn't have enough time to really concentrate on novels or non-fiction books, so it had to be something he could read quickly.
Mm. And did you do much reading for his job as well?
Well, of course, they had to read all the papers and things that were there, and he was interested in the whole of the Westminster system history.
Mm. Okay, so he probably would have read about that quite widely.
Yes.
Mm. Mm. Okay.
But I was the one who was the reader in the family.
Is that right? Yes. Oh, it sounds like he was. He might have been an influence. Well, your mother, did she read as well?
She did, but she preferred golf books.
Oh, well, that goes along with the interest, mm-hmm. certainly. So I guess, you know, I was going to ask, you know, whether your father talked much about the reasons that he came to Canberra, but obviously he came here.
He came with the Parliament.
As part of his mm. job. So once
and
Parliament
he was quite happy to do that.
Mm. So 1927, Canberra was a fairly small place. How did your mother feel about the move?
Well, she didn't come until 1937 when she got married. He was here for 10 years before he got married.
Oh, right. Mm. So were they a couple?
No, no. Melbourne? Didn't meet until 35 or something.
Oh,
or other.
I see.
He was so one of Canberra's most eligible bachelors at the time, apparently.
Right.
Mm.
So had she come from, where had she come from?
Melbourne.
As well?
Yes. They met on holidays at on Phillip Island, I think.
Right. So when did she move to Canberra, do you know?
Oh, they got married in 1937 and she'd come up a couple of times to see it.
Okay, so he'd met her in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, there on holidays.
When he was living here. Right, mm. and then she came here to when they got married.
Mm.
Oh, great. So
he lived at Brassey House.
Yeah, I was going to say, where did he first... So he came here and moved into Brassey House, which was...
Lived there for 10 years.
Yes. And did he talk much about that?
Oh, yes, there was quite a bit because he talked a lot about those days and he made many, many friends from that time because you did, because there wasn't a great deal of entertainment. You made your own entertainment and you've... but there seemed to have been loads of picnics and he had a car and trips out to the river and trips to the snow and trips to the coast, and they all seemed to be a good sort of young crowd who played tennis and golf and did everything at the weekends or went fishing and together. It seemed to have been sort of really a nice atmosphere there because, as I say, there weren't very many distractions.
No.
And because he was a driver and didn't drink, he was very popular for taking everyone into the pub in Queanbeyan on Friday nights because he would be the designated driver, as it were.
Yes, yes. Mm. So very popular for his car, if nothing else.
Yes, yes.
And as you say, you said your mother came up a couple of times after they'd met. And,
yeah.
Mm. And obviously the relationship was developing. So
yes.
Did they talk about, you know, they go to dances and balls?
I think they played golf. Mostly.
Yeah, well, the early golf course, which was...
At the back of the Albert Hall, yes.
That's right. Mm. Oh, gosh.
And she came up once with her father, and she came up another time with a girlfriend, and I think she came two or three different times. I've got film of that, some of her visits, because her father was keen on taking movies, home movies, and I gave them all to the National Screen and Sound Archive, and they've taken out excerpts. Some of them are in that actual film that they did on Canberra, and and so I've got some others, and they put a DVD. They gave me a separate DVD of my selection of home movies.
Yes, because there wouldn't have been too much film of early Canberra, of that period that still exists. What about the opening itself? You've just very generously given us a couple of photos of that period. Did he talk at all?
Yes, yes.
Did he have a role to play, I guess?
Oh, yes, he would have. Because they had to sort of accommodate a huge influx of people from everywhere, so I think they were all pretty flat out on that. Mm. But the talk of the thing was Melba.
Yes. And what was the talk?
Oh, that Madame Melba was being Madame Melba the whole time, which was a total prima donna, extremely difficult to work with, and then the technology failed and all sorts of problems.
Yes, she ended up being drowned out by the flypast.
Yes, and she was not a happy person, apparently. But she wasn't. She didn't endear herself to any of them at the time because she was too difficult and too temperamental to work with.
Yes.
And I think one of the reasons was that she wasn't actually well in those days. I've read her biography, and it seems that by that stage she had a lot of health problems, and probably standing outside in Canberra on a bleak May day would not have been very conducive to her happy demeanour.
It was quite a cold day, I guess.
Yeah.
So even though the sun came out for a while, and I think it ended up with rain later in the day.
So. Yes.
And did he mention, did he meet the Duke and Duchess of York, or did he...
I'm not sure. He may not have. I don't know.
Yeah, he would have seen them in the chamber.
Oh, yes, he would have seen them up close and anything. Mm. I think he did one stage, but he was talking about the present Queen as well, saying, and Princess Margaret, that they were all, nobody realised how short they were until they saw them in the flesh, because they're all about, you know, not much more than 5 foot tall.
Right.
Yes.
So that's something we tend not to realise.
No.
How would you describe his character and personality? Did he, obviously, you said he had lots of friends when he was here, so was he a gregarious type of person?
He was. Everybody liked him. He was good company. He enjoyed chat and a joke and things like that. He was very, I've never heard him being deliberately or publicly bitchy about anybody or anything. I mean, at times things would make him angry. But he was also extremely intelligent. He had an incredibly incisive mind, and he could, you know, shut me up in 2 seconds by saying, "And what's the point of this?"
He was a bit of a hard taskmaster.
He was a very hard taskmaster, but I think it's because he saw that I had advantages that he'd never had, and so
he wanted you to.
He wanted to make sure that I did my schoolwork and could do my maths and could do my Latin and could do everything that was required. And
well, he must have been very, would have needed dedication as much as anything else to continue his studies here. So he was still doing them through, what, Melbourne
through
University?
Melbourne. Mm. They had Canberra University College then, and so they could go to lectures here.
Right. And how long did you say it took him to take?
He got his degree in, I think, 1931.
Right, so it was a good 3 or 4 years of still studying when he came here. Of course, doing it at part-time.
And because they had very long night work in those days too.
Yes, so that would have... Did your mother ever talk about whether that...
She didn't know him.
No, no, that's right.
She hadn't met him by that stage.
Yes, so I suppose he was single. He had the time to devote to it. Right. And were you the only child of the family?
Yes. I appeared quite... Well, they married late, and then I appeared further on in their lives, and they never really recovered.
Well, it was reasonably common for, you know, there was the depression looming, and so it was a difficult time for a lot of couples. So, did your mother talk much about coming to Canberra to live and after they were married and what life was like for her here in such a small town?
She was popular from the moment that they found out that my father was keeping company, as it were, with her. She was in demand to come here. Everybody wanted her to come because she was a champion golfer, and they just thought that she would lift the pennant team and the competition and everything else. So she immediately fell completely on her feet because she was popular and had all this attention heaped upon her.
And is that what happened? Did she lift the standard of golf?
Yes, certainly she did, yes.
So when she wasn't playing golf, what else did she do to keep herself occupied?
She did her normal sort of domestic life in those days. There was absolutely no idea of her ever getting a job. Her family were far better off than Dad's family had been, and so she wasn't supposed to work anyhow. And she became a golfer because during the Depression, her father said to her, "You can do whatever you like, but keep out of the shops." And so she would go down and practice at the golf club. And she said there were men who were desperate for money, and they would be happy to field balls for a shilling an hour or something rather like that.
Right.
Yeah. And she would go and practice every day, and became how she became so good.
Okay, so it was a Depression era pastime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, great. Where did they live when they first were married?
And
do you know where they got married?
Yes, they got married in Melbourne, but they came straight up here. They lived in Sir Robert Garran's house in Mugaway while they were building their house.
Oh. Okay.
Because he was away somewhere or other, I'm not sure.
And what was his...
He was Solicitor General, Sir Robert Garran, who wrote was the father of the Constitution.
Yes. And what year was that they married?
They were married in 1937.
1937, right.
And then they were building their own house.
Yes,
and
where was that?
That was the corner of Arthur Circle and Moresby Street.
Okay.
61 Arthur Circle. So it was a very modern,
forest at that stage, or Blandford?
No, it was Red Hill.
Red Hill, okay.
Mm. Dad had sussed out all the land and the places around.
Mm.
And having spent 10 Canberra winters, his quest was for something that would get as much sun as possible. So he bought that block and orientated the house so that it would capture all the winter sun.
Oh, that would have been very unusual.
It was, yes.
So he didn't use any of the standard government
designs? No. They had Moyer was the architect who did it. Mm. Mm.
And that house is still there?
It's still there, but it's been corrupted.
Oh, it's been altered.
That's the nicest word I can say to about it.
Okay, we'll probably get back to the social life a bit more later. But do you think that your dad working here and the hours that he would have had to have kept at times, did that impact on your mother and then on you after you were born?
Didn't think it impacted too much on her. It impacted on me a lot. But he was very good. He used to always, if the house was sitting late, when they got up at 6 o'clock for the dinner break, he would always phone home and speak to me before I went to bed so that I could chat to him and tell him about my day and things like that. So that was nice. But they had this huge block of land with an orchard, a huge vegetable garden, and chooks and the rest of it.
Mm.
And it was down to me at a very young age to look after everything.
Oh.
And I didn't realise until I was quite a bit older that other kids didn't do an hour's chores before they went to school and an hour's chores before when they came home.
So that was your mother directing you to your chores?
No, it was her head was in the cloud somewhere. She was probably on the ninth green mentally at the time. And it was the fact that these things needed to be done. And Dad would show me how to mix the mash for the chooks, and, I knew how to get the eggs and how to protect the plants and how to water. And, so I was the sort of general farmhand, as it were.
Yes, I'm just wondering if next question here, I was going to ask about the Depression, and I'm just wondering, so your mother was still in Melbourne during the Depression, and she was, as you say, playing golf and
keeping
herself
out of the
that
shop.
Way, and
he was here.
He was here, and living a bachelor life.
Mm.
But I'm just wondering if that had, an impact on the way he thought and about when he did have a chance to own his own block, whether he wanted to be not self-sufficient, but,
I think they did in Canberra because there was no choice and you were limited to what you could get in the way of fruit and veg and things like that. So everybody had gardens and everybody had chooks. It wasn't uncommon.
No.
Ours was just bigger.
I guess there would have been his colleagues, his friends who were in a similar situation, I suppose, when they were marrying and getting large blocks.
Yes, although many of them didn't go in for such a large block.
No.
Sort of thing.
No. And did he talk at all about the Depression?
Not really, because he was here.
So he had a steady job.
Yeah.
and he was
really focused on that. Mm. And there was a paper that I gave you, which was about the economic situation in the 1930s. Mm. He also went to Europe and the States. He took a sabbatical in 1931, 32, I think it was. And he's had his diaries of that time, and he was noticing that, in Europe there were so many people in uniform, and in America there were so many that were out of work, and the Depression was really bad in America when he was there.
Mm, and he kept those diaries from that trip. Mm. Yeah. Oh, that was great. So what did he do? He just travelled?
He travelled, but he went to the House of Commons when he was in London, and he did the same in Canada and in Washington, D.C.
So he would have been observing parliamentary process and practices.
Mm-hmm. And then he'd been on that Royal Commission into the motion picture industry. So he went to Hollywood.
So
and
when
they,
was that?
I think it was 1929, right. 20, yes,
okay.
Not long
so
after
just,
that.
Just
yeah,
the start
because
of Depression.
The motion picture industry was really big in Australia, and they thought that this could be a serious income revenue for Australia in the future. So he went to Hollywood and he got looked after like a prince in Hollywood because the Americans were very keen to sort of catch in onto the Australian market and get their films promoted here.
Gosh, that's great. Did he talked about that?
Yeah.
Did he have mementos and things that he kept from those troubles.
Yeah, but he did remember that he was in one of the studios and the head of the studio's office, and a messenger boy came in and handed him a paper, and he said, "Thanks, boy." And he said, as he left, he said to my dad, "That boy will be a major star soon." And his name was Gary Cooper.
Oh, so right.
But he was working as a messenger at whatever the particular studio was.
Back in those days of the big major studios. Gosh. Oh, that would have been fascinating. And your mum missed out. She wasn't on the scene
Wasn't on the scene at that stage.
Did they just, as an aside, did they travel together later?
They went on their honeymoon. They went to Hong Kong. And then we all went to England in 1951 when he went to the House of Commons.
Okay, so he went later after the war. Mm. I just wanted to ask you about the war years a little bit, because he was seconded to the Department of Munitions.
Yes.
So do you know what work he did there?
No, I don't. But he was sort of the right hand to Fred Shadden,
who was
the head of munitions
minister at the time.
Yeah, and I think he was also the liaison between them and the people in Canberra from the defence side of things. So I think he was the sort of link there.
So did he talk much about the war news?
Not a great deal. I just knew, well, I don't remember it from that time anyhow. He came back to Canberra when I was just over 12 months old, so.
Okay, right. So he was based in, when you say came back to Canberra?
From Melbourne. He was in.
He said he was in Melbourne for that
with
whole.
With munitions for that 2 years.
Time. Right. Okay, but in the meantime, your mother fell pregnant with you?
Yeah, well, she got pregnant with me before they went to Melbourne, so I can always say I was made in Canberra, even if I wasn't actually.
So she stayed here?
She went
to Melbourne as well? Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, and then you were born here?
No, I was born in Melbourne.
Oh, in Melbourne. Okay, yes. Right. Okay, made here, but born
there.
Born in Melbourne and then came up here.
Yeah.
How old were you when you
Just over
came
a year.
Back? So right at the end of the war, was that?
No, it was 42.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So
I was born in 1940.
Start of the Pacific War, really.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
We had blackout blinds in Canberra. We had an air raid shelter in our garden.
Yes, which was...
Yes,
reasonably.
Everybody did. Quite a lot of people did have.
Yeah.
And
I wonder if that's still there, like the one at Calthorpe's house.
Yes, I don't know. But the I do remember them telling me that at one stage they had, I think it was before they went to Melbourne, or it might have been about this time anyhow, they decided to go down to the coast for the day and saved up the petrol ration to go down to the coast. But there were no signs up anywhere, no road directions or anything. And they got to Braidwood and they couldn't work out whether they should go straight ahead or turn left. And they didn't dare ask anybody because you'd have been looked at though you were suspicious if you asked directions how to get to the coast. So they had to turn round and come home again.
Make it. Oh, no. Oh,
but all the road signs and everything had come down.
Oh, I see. Oh.
Not the street names in Canberra, but the signposts on the roads.
Okay.
Had all been removed.
So, what happened with the house here then? Did they?
They let it when they went to Melbourne to some Americans, which convinced us never, ever, ever let a house to Americans.
Why is that?
Because they had no discipline with their children.
So they did a bit of.
They did some mega damage.
Oh, no.
Mm. They were diplomatic, you couldn't get anything back from them.
Okay. So you came back from Melbourne and your mother and father had to promptly start cleaning up.
Yeah.
Gosh. And then, so your dad went straight back to...
He went straight back to work.
Back to Parliament.
Yeah.
All right, I'll talk a bit more about the his parliamentary work here. Whether, as you've already commented, that he was very careful to be non-partisan, and I imagine that continued for the rest of his working life.
Yes.
Did he, were there any particular politicians that he used to talk about or liked more than others, or any that you could tell that he perhaps didn't like so much?
He respected Menzies a lot. I'm not sure that he necessarily liked him, but he certainly respected him, and he thought he was a very good leader, and although he didn't approve of all the things that he did. He liked Chifley, he liked Curtin, he liked Artie Fadden, Oh, there were quite a number of them that he liked, but there were one or two where he was, I know that he had special links with. One was Hugh Robertson.
Who was he?
He was a Liberal member for somewhere, I think, around the Murrumbidgee Irrigation area, or somewhere around that area, but he was a Scot. And he had a wicked sense of humour, and they used to exchange poems in the chamber. Mm. They would write a poem and get it passed over and then get the message passed back. So if the proceedings were a bit quiet, they would be sitting there writing their little bits of doggerel. And
I guess they had to do something to keep themselves occupied. Mm. 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 Does he have any particular stories, anecdotes about goings-on or particular people?
Well, the one of the times when it was, I remember particularly, was when Eleanor Roosevelt came to Canberra because she was drumming up support for the American war effort, and I think to get money for supporting some of her charities and things. And she came to Canberra with a huge retinue of people and a bulletproof car and the rest of it. And the FBI, presume it was FBI people who were with her, wanted to wear their guns into Parliament House. And Dad was the one who said, no, you do not wear guns into an Australian Parliament building. Okay. And they said, oh, yes, we have to. We've got a protector. And they said, Dad said no. And they didn't. They had to leave their guns at home.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Couldn't even leave them at the, you know, the front desk or
anything. No. That would have been considered too risky. Mm. But so she came, apparently, and addressed, I don't know whether it was the joint, it might have been a joint sitting joint, that she spoke to. Mm. But the FBI were there without their guns on.
Gosh. Well, that's something you would remember, wouldn't you, when you've put your foot down to someone at that level.
Yes.
You sort of alluded to the fact that he had very long days. He was there when you know, the sittings did go very late.
Oh, they went all night sometimes. And that's why he finally resigned when he did, because the night work was getting to him. You know, he was finding it more and more difficult.
Many years of that, hadn't
he? Yeah. Mm.
Did he, I'm just reflecting back on his career, he was Sergeant at Arms from 1927, so he came here and he was promoted.
Yeah.
So that's an increase in his responsibility. And then he becomes Clerk Assistant in 1937, then Clerk of the House from 1935. So, yeah, that's a long period of time at that level of responsibility. Mm. So you think that ultimately it took its toll.
Yes, and the other reason was that took its toll. And the other thing was that he had been so, not put out of it, but he was not happy with the fact that Frank Green, his predecessor, because he came from Tasmania, was allowed to stay there till he was 70 in the job.
Okay.
But that was just because the Tasmanian Parliament had that rule, and because he'd come from Tasmania, it applied to him. Everybody else had to retire at 65. Uh-huh. But Frank Green stayed there until he was 70, but he never did any work. He never appeared. And so it meant that everybody was there on a lower salary, but doing the work at the next level up.
Yes. Was your father deputy before he
would have been clerk assistant at that stage.
Yes, clerk assistant. Mm-hmm. And so he was in that position of having to fill in for Frank. Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
Oh, he'd turn up for openings of Parliament and a couple of major things, but that would be it.
Gosh. Mm. So it must have been a relief, in a sense, for him to finally get the position and
well, everybody was glad of it, yes.
did he like the job? Did he give the impression that...
Oh, absolutely. I think he was in love with the job, really.
What do you think he liked about it so much?
Because you're absolutely at the centre of everything that's happening. And it's a fascination, and it is a fascinating world. I'm fascinated by it as well. Yes. I wouldn't have wanted to be in it in exactly the same way, but I can see how you can get so completely caught up in the whole thing of politics. It is running the nation.
That's right. And did he then bring that home when he, you know, when he eventually did come home? Did he and your mother talk politics or any particular issues that were going on at the time, do you think?
Very occasionally there were some. I mean, there was one that, the other one that he was very angry about was the Brown and Fitzpatrick case. Mm. And he said it was so ridiculous that they should have been treated like common criminals. And he said it was just ridiculous the way that went on. In fact, Brown and Fitzpatrick didn't do too badly. They stayed at the The police station at that stage where they were staying was opposite the Hotel Civic, and their meals were brought across, including refreshments from the Hotel Civic. So it wasn't
too hard on them.
No. But he felt that that was a bit of a mockery of Parliament.
Yeah, okay. What about events like Menzies trying to ban the Communist Party and through the referendum, that sort of thing?
That was quite interesting because Dad had a cousin called William Hamilton Tregear, who had been an exceptionally bright student, and then swam in the Australian team, and if you were good at athletics, good at everything. His father was killed in an accident, and on the way back from the funeral he was in a car crash and killed his mother. So he was seriously affected by this, and they said, we have to take him to a psychiatrist and get him, you know, some therapy. And the psychiatrist said, we have to find an interest for him, and the psychiatrist's interest was the Communist Party. So young William joined the Communist Party. Oh, and it was, of course, incredible embarrassment to my father, even more to his brother, who was William Stanley Tregear, because he was the next one down in the telephone directory. But everybody would say, Tregear, that's communist leanings, maybe. So he was, had to be very carefully explain to people that that was actually a cousin and not a second cousin, in fact, I think, not even a proper first cousin or a brother or anything. So.
And did he express views about Menzies' attempts to ban the Communist Party?